Oh, welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, the Fan. Blue Jays traveled from the West Coast back home last night. Look at the walk around the Rogers Center today before we all get to head down for the home opener tomorrow night. It's going to be a great way to start your home season.
Did you secure tickets for that?
I sure did.
Ready to rock.
Pay an arm and a leg, but it'll be worth it.
Of course it will. Which new amenity are you going to hang out at?
I don't know. I'm going to have to go to all of them. It's going to be busy, so I might just be picking my spot and staying there. And I'm sure things will die out a bit in terms of the lines.
I think it's going to keep going all summer long.
Okay. Yes, it will, of course. But nonetheless, I'll be there. I'm excited. But no Blue Jays baseball tonight. You got to stay tuned for tomorrow when they start against the Detroit Tigers, and then they play the red-hot Tampa Bay Rays on the weekend. But coming off one of the craziest games we've ever seen, let's talk to our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Jeff Blair of Sportsnet.ca and host of Blair and Barker. Last night or yesterday afternoon's game must have been one of the most wild ones that you've seen in your career. Is that right?
I don't know. I mean, I covered the Montreal Expos for a lot of years, so I had some pretty bizarre games. I mean, I guess the good thing is with all the rules changes this year, if you score more runs than the other team, you still win. So that'll, as long as that rule stays in place, the Blue Jays will be okay. But yeah, it's, I don't know if I've seen a lot of games where the momentum, I hate the word momentum in baseball. I don't know if I've seen a lot of games where the scoreboard changes came as quickly as they did in that game and as you know, dramatically. I mean, the Matt Chapman grand slam just didn't seem to be in the cards in that particular day. And I think that's the thing that stood out about that game is it was so dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from the Blue Jays' point of view, like, I went back and looked at Trevor Richards' pitches. He made some really good pitches. He really did. It was one of those days where a lot of decent pitches were made and guys hit them, but which typically happens when you have a game like that, right? It's sometimes it's almost a situation where the pitchers are too much around the plate or where the pitchers are too good or just in the right location, and that lends to a lot of offense. But I mean, it was a good game to win. There's no doubt about it, because as I said, first three innings of that game, it did not look like the Jays were going to pull one out.
Yep, they rally from a 6-0 deficit and score 10 unanswered runs, and then there's this forcing the extra innings, and then, oh, yeah, lots of excitement. But they return home 6-4, which is a much better way to be starting your home stand here than a 5-5 record. All right, so let's talk about the offense, because that's certainly something that's been a highlight of this past weekend. Then we'll get into the rotation. But Chapman, grand slam, his start of the season. He's leading the league in WAR. He's consistently contributing to this team. What's been the change? Is it really the toe tap? Is there something different about his approach that's just really amplified who he can be offensively with this team?
Yeah, I mean, he's on time this year. And, you know, maybe he's completely healthy. He did have, you know, a hip issue 2 years ago. And I don't know, some guys it's not just a matter of getting it repaired and rehabbing and hitting the ground running again, especially, you know, that type of an injury for a hitter. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it took him 18 months to get fully healthy again, but he's a different guy. The people are going to think about the toe tap and go, could that really make a difference? And, well, yeah, it can, because it serves as your trigger and it gets everything started. And that helps you be on time. And when you're on time, when you're on time and you're a strong guy, you can do a lot of damage. And, you know, let's not forget, this is the guy who I'm sure has looked at the free agent market this year. I mean, there's no left-sided infielder, shortstop, or third baseman of any value out there for the most part, other than Matt Chapman. So this is Matt Chapman's big payday. At his age and at this stage of his career, this is going to be the big contract he will ever sign. And I've got to think that maybe, I'm not saying that necessarily has given him extra motivation, because I don't think Matt has ever been a guy who's needed motivation, but what it may have done is given a greater sense of urgency towards making some of those changes in his approach. And just being a glove first guy and a gold glove caliber defender is not going to be enough to get you paid in this market next year. And I think maybe he's realized that.
First impressions are big. And the first impression on this season is one of, okay, Matt Chapman is a star. And I wonder, with that contract and that contract narrative, has he already like completely changed it? He has already bumped up into a next text bracket through 10 games. Has he already changed the thought around his contract so far this season?
No, nothing's changed after 10 games. I mean, if anything, he hasn't dug himself a hole that would require an awful lot of digging out of to get that big payday. But, you know, in this analytic age, I mean, I'm sure there are teams looking at Matt Chapman, and they've probably found flaws in his swing that, even with these numbers, that we haven't been able to notice. So, I don't buy that narrative. Nobody goes from being a $160 million player to a $200 million player in 10 good games, especially at the start of the year. You know, if he finishes the year hitting 320 or something like that, then we can talk. But, based on the body of work, this isn't Matt Chapman, right? There's nothing in his career that suggests that this is going to be the end product. I don't think that has any impact on it at all.
Okay, 10 games in, 2 spins through the rotation, 3 series played exclusively on the road. 6-4, definitely a lot better than 5-5. Keeps the, if we want to use the word again, momentum going into their first game at the new look Rogers Center. If you had one key takeaway from the first 10 games, what would it be?
That they've got enough offense to overcome the fact that 2/5 of the rotation may not be very good. Look, I don't know. I've given up trying to figure out Jose Barrios. If anything, we saw, I shouldn't say won't be really good, but will be inconsistent, I guess, and unreliable would be the way to phrase it. Again, Jose Barrios, he threw some really good pitches, but for whatever reason, he seems to go through spells where he just can't do anything right, and I don't know how you correct that. You see Kikuchi, again, yesterday, I thought the stuff was really good in a lot of instances. But the same thing, right? Dalton Varsho misplays that fly ball. Yeah, it's not great, but it happens. And it's like you see Kikuchi doesn't fall apart, but it's like he just goes through spells where it's almost as if he is expecting calamity. Right, and then he gets it straightened around. Like it was, you know, in retrospect, the fact that he was able to stay in as long as he did yesterday and give that offense a chance to get going was pretty significant. I still feel, it's only been 2 starts, but I've seen more out of Yusei Kikuchi through 2 starts than I saw out of him at any point last year as a starter. So that gives me cause for optimism with him. And I really think, you know, the biggest optimistic takeaway I had from the weekend was Chris Bassett. I mean, that stuff plays. He made some really good pitches to Shohei Ohtani, and Shohei Ohtani clearly had no idea what he was seeing. And that is really, because Chris Bassett is going to be a guy who's always going to give you heart palpitations. But he showed in that game that he is able to get out of jams. And that was, you know, when I look at those 3 games, if you ask me what stands out most about the pitching, that would be it. Chris Bassett's outing, Chris Bassett's stuff, a couple of at-bats against Shohei Ohtani. That's what really stood out to me. I thought, okay, now I see why this is a guy that induces so much soft contact, and now I see why this is a guy who just battles his way out of stuff, and that's good. That's what I want for my 3rd starter. Chris Bassett, I'll be happy.
Where are you at with Brandon Belt?
Nowhere. I mean, he's an older dude. You know, I didn't... when they signed him, I didn't see the fuss about it. To me, he's a guy. Again, coming off injury, he may not be very good anymore. But he's also an older guy coming off injury, so I need to see where he is at the end of April. It would be nice if he didn't strike out and make contact. That would be a start. But, I never bought into the idea that Brandon Belt was going to be this team's cleanup hitter. It was just ludicrous. It was silly. It was just dumb. It was daft. He's a guy. And when he's on, he's a guy who can help this team. But, I never saw him being a major offensive contributor. So I'm not at all surprised he is where he is right now. I'm not upset he is where he is right now.
Kevin Kiermaier has certainly won the hearts of a lot of folks here in Toronto. Early returns looking great. I think they called him a heartthrob in every sense on the broadcast, and that made me laugh. But, yeah, if you have that guy in your nine spot with, five RBIs yesterday, look pretty good. What are your early thoughts on how Kevin Kiermaier fits on this team, I guess offensively and defensively right now?
I mean, as long as he's healthy, he's a really good player for this team, and he helps upgrade the outfield. That's the whole thing with Kiermaier is... health. There's no doubt he's still got the skill set. He's still a great defender. What I have been really pleasantly surprised by is the fact that from the start in spring training and from the start in Grapefruit League games, the speed has been there. I expected there would be a glitch. I expected there would be a hamstring injury that would keep him out for 2 weeks. That may still happen because that body has got a lot of miles on it. It's got a lot of miles on turf. It's got a lot of diving catches in the outfield in Tampa. It's got a lot of postseason baseball in it. So, again, as long as he's healthy, he'll be fine. And the main thing for me is what he does out of that number two or that number nine spot in the order and kind of turning things over for George Springer. If he can continue to do what he's doing, and if he can somehow give this team 140 games this year, that'll be one of the really good free agent signings this club's made in recent years.
We got Jeff Blair, co-host of Blair and Barker, and a columnist at Sportsnet.ca on the line. So Blue Jays start their new look Rogers Centre game tomorrow, home opener. What are you looking forward to most about the Rogers Centre, or maybe how it's going to play differently this time around?
I'm going to be interested in how many fights there are in the general admission.
I'm going to start them.
Section with, all the availability of alcohol, the idea that you've got unassigned seating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm saving the seat for my buddy. Really? That isn't going to work. I'm interested in seeing what happens in the outfield bullpen area. I'm not a big fan of having fans hanging over the edge of the bullpen or having access to players because we've all been to games at the Rogers Centre and we know that, shall we say, this is not always the best behaved crowd in baseball when there's a big crowd in play. So I have some concerns. But in terms of how the ballpark plays, I'm going to be watching Dalton Varsho's at-bats really carefully. I'm going to be watching Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s at-bats very carefully because I think that'll tell us just how friendly this ballpark is going to be. And I'm really interested in getting back to Kevin Kiermaier. I'm interested in seeing Kevin Kiermaier play center field in this ballpark with all the weird little configurations and the funky little configurations of it. I think it's going to be fun. And I think I'm hoping that it continues to create something the Jays have sort of gained since 2015, and that is a pronounced home field advantage. And I think that's what you want in a ballpark. And I also, it's going to be interesting because at some point you're going to have to get a new ballpark built in Toronto. And really what this has done, it's if this refurb works out, as it probably will, you know, if it works out and if it brings people into the stands, it may have pushed back by a couple of years the idea that you are going to need a new ballpark in the city. But eventually you will. It's an old place, and it's not going to get any younger.
Yeah, it might be a good idea that the first game is on a Tuesday night rather than like a Friday night because, yeah, I think there's going to be some excitement, and we had the chance to tour the park on Friday, and yeah, there's a lot of access to the opponents, so it will be interesting on rowdy nights. It'll be interesting in the playoffs if the Blue Jays can indeed get there. To help them get there, they'll need, you know, good quality performances out of the bullpen. It's kind of the one thing that sticks out to me. The thing that I can't shake in my mind is that there's not enough back there. What do you make of the state of the Blue Jays bullpen and how they've fared through 10 games?
I mean, I've been pleasantly surprised. I think there's way more back there than I thought there was. Jimmy Garcia has been terrific. He's found extra velo. He was great at the World Baseball Classic. Well, I wouldn't say great, but he was throwing hard at the World Baseball Classic. And I think Eric Swanson's going to be a really pleasant surprise. I still think they need more power out of the back end. Based on what I'm seeing in Buffalo, I think you're going to see Nate Pearson up here soon. Maybe Yosver Zuleta. So I feel a lot better about it than I did at the start of the year. Would I want it going head-to-head with another team in the playoffs? Not the way it's constructed right now. I'd like to see somebody come along. No disrespect to Trevor Richards, but I'd like to see somebody come along and push him out of the bullpen. I'd like to see a little. I like Zach Pop. I really think Zach Pop would profit from being in AAA for a year and just closing and not doing anything else, because I think there's found money in Zach Pop. I think Zach Pop in the next two or three years will be one of the most important relievers in this bullpen. So if I could get an upgrade there, I'd be okay. And you know, the other thing that does is if the starting rotation is still kind of wobbly at the trade deadline, it allows you to make a move to address the starting rotation, because there's really nobody. I mean, there's nobody in Triple. There's nobody in the minors that's going to come up and solve an issue this team has with starting rotation. I mean, if Jose Barrios is just a lost cause, sorry, Mitch White doesn't do it for me. If Jose Barrios is a lost cause, and you say Kikuchi is still a guy who's on his good day only going to give you five innings, you have to go out and come up with another answer. So if the bullpen gets itself straightened around, that opens the possibility that when I do have to make a trade, or if I do have to make a trade, perhaps I can focus on starting pitching.
Yeah, I don't think there are going to be shortage of options for the Blue Jays when we get into, you know, the final iteration of this team, whether it's going to look to add a bat that replaces a Brendan Belt, or fix the Yusei Kikuchi or Jose Barrios problem, or just get someone in the bullpen that knocks everyone else down a rung. I think in the bullpen, it would look a lot better if everyone just had a little bit less of responsibility and had one more lead dog with a lot of stuff back there. It could really, really change the complexion of what had already a bullpen that's showing signs of some serious potential. But one team with no issues from a pitching standpoint, and no issues really around the diamond, is Tampa Bay Rays. I want to get ahead of ourselves because the Blue Jays still have to deal with the Tigers, but this weekend the Rays come to town. What do you make of the Tampa Bay Rays start? They're doing things that we haven't seen before through nine games, 9-0. They look awesome. Are they as good as they've showed so far?
I mean, the pitching should be. That's not a surprise. The offense has been remarkable. I don't think anybody saw that coming. You know, they're the Rays. One thing about the Rays is when they start selling me something, I buy it. And I'm buying what they're showing right now. I really am. And you know, the scary thing is they get the guy with the best stuff in their system back in a couple of weeks in Tyler Glasnow. And I know that the Rays' plan with him in spring training was to really limit his innings, to essentially turn him into a four or a five-inning starter. And if that works and they can keep Tyler Glasnow healthy for the end of the year, it's a scary thought, but as good as they are right now, they become even better once they get him back in. And everybody is going to hit a skid at some point. Everybody's going to have a four-game losing streak at some point. But my goodness, when you, you know, when you're rattling off wins the way the Rays are, and taking advantage of the schedule the way the Rays are, you can afford. You're basically pocketing a lot of wins that you're going to look back on in August and go, well, you know, thank God that we got off to that hot start. I think this is. They're not going to go through the season undefeated, but could they finish first in the East? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it looks like the Rays are going to see Barrios and Kikuchi this weekend, so it will be an interesting weekend. And, you know, we might not have a Raptors game. We don't have a Leafs game on Saturday and Sunday, so all eyes will be on the Blue Jays this weekend with a big series already with the Tampa Bay Rays. Jeff, we appreciate you coming on. Enjoy opening night tomorrow at Rogers Center. Enjoy the homestand, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Ailish. Thanks, Justin.
That's Jeff Blair, columnist at Sportsnet.ca and co-host of Blair and Barker, and our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
I'm fired up for tomorrow, Justin.
Are you?
Yeah.
What's your pregame routine? Is it like a big night?
I'm a professional. I have to work the next morning.
Okay, but like you can go for dinner? Like, are you going to make a night out of it?
I got to get there early, I feel like, because it's going to be a zoo.
So that's the plan, to go back there then? You're going to try and mix
it
up?
Usually you can arrive at the ballpark like 6:45, 6:30 if you're eager, but I think there's going to be crazy lines, so I think you should be heading there for 6. And you don't want to miss the pregame ceremonies. You don't want to miss all that fun stuff. Like, it's going to be an event, right? It's not just a regular Tuesday night game.
Are you going to be trying to find some whether it's the bleachers or something to lean on in the outfield? You can stay in your seats?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not going to go to the jungle back there.
Well, we'll see how things are going.
They got to come up with...
But Jeff's made a good point. This is going to be a bit crazy out there.
Oh, it's nuts. Again, we mentioned it on Friday. 6-foot fence probably separates the bullpen from the fans and the most raucous area we expect at the Rogers Center. We've got to come up with a good nickname for that little area, those bleachers.
Ooh, we'll think about
it. We'll see how it looks. There's first. Something you don't want to force it, right? My strategy, and we can maybe talk about this in the Wake and Rake next, might just spam bet all the Tampa Bay Rays pitchers for Cy Young. Jeff mentioned Tyler Glasnow, a guy that's going to be coming back and has the best stuff in the Rays starting rotation. 150-1 right now.
There you go.
Guess what you say Kikuchi's at?
30-1.
No, it's 50-1.
I already knew it was 50-1.
There are only 20 pitchers with shorter odds in the American League doing this. American League Cy Young.
It's worth $5, is it not?
No, it's not. He's not. I think he's already crossed himself off the list.
What a bummer.
Tyler Glasnow, though, might have to do that in the break.
All right, so no Blue Jays tonight. You just got Maple Leafs, 7 p.m. against Florida Panthers. Maybe Matthew Nye's debut as a Maple Leaf, maybe not. We don't know yet, but... there's rumblings and mumblings. Canada, United States, and IIHF Women's Worlds are going to head down to Brampton to watch that one tonight. We got all that in the Wake and Rake to tee up. Plus, the Red Sox are playing the Rays, and I might be fading the Rays, even though they're making a historic great start to the
year. You're
going
to step in front of the Tampa Bay Rays?
I sure might.
Okay. You sure might.
I sure might. But we're going to wrap up our Masters talk on the other side of the break with Jason Sobel. He's Action Network and golf writer there and host of SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. Rom wins the Masters title, but was it also a win for LIV Golf? That's next on the other side of the break. And also send in your picks, because we'll get to a baby Wake and Rake after Jason.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Wake and Rake. We'll do in a second here. We're trying to connect with Jason Sobel, golf writer at the Action Network, host of SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio, to talk a little Masters. So you can get your Wake and Rake selections in still. We'll do that before we got off the air at 9. Masters in the books. A wet and wild Masters.
Okay. There's already odds out for next year. I was looking at those.
I'll tie up money for 365 days. I'll try not to do that, especially with John Rahm, who's probably 6-1, 7-1 in that range.
Yeah, 7-1.
To repeat as Masters winner. We do have Jason on the line now, golf writer again at the Action Network and a host at SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. Jason, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Good morning, guys. Making my drive home from Augusta. It's always the best week of the year and the worst drive afterwards after we leave Augusta.
Oh, where are you going?
I live in Orlando, so a little six-hour drive. Not a big deal.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not bad. At least it'll be dry there, I hope, at least. It was a wet weekend. It was a bit of a nightmare from a weather standpoint. Did that damper the occasion to the degree that maybe we expected watching from home?
No, in fact, I was talking about this with some of my colleagues this weekend. We can't really predict Mother Nature or sort of, you know, request of Mother Nature what we would like to see. Even Augusta National doesn't have a direct line to the weather and dialing up what they want. I, though, always think it's great. We saw the Players' Championship last year. We've seen it in a handful of majors over the last few years when we have a few different weather patterns, a few different types of conditions over the course of four rounds. And what happens is that it tests players' games in those different conditions. So we'll have, you know, it will start fast and firm. We'll get some rain. It'll play soft. I think that we tend to get the best champion when we have different weather as opposed to the same weather for all 4 days of the tournament.
So yeah, that's an interesting point. Does it make Rahm's victory more or less impressive? Because, you know, it maybe takes the opportunity for guys to go nuclear and go super low, but I guess Rahm's in that same boat. He has to deal with the conditions, and he dealt with the conditions best. So was this more or less impressive that Rahm was able to get his green jacket dealing with what he had to deal with this weekend?
Yeah, certainly not less impressive, I'll put it that way. I thought that the major underlying theme of John Rahm's week was perseverance, because he was my pick to win this past week. And I only say that because I looked up at the board after one hole on Thursday morning and he was two over par after four putting the opening green. I'm like, oh man, I can't believe this is going on. And he wound up making nine birdies and shared the opening round lead. And then he got on the wrong side of that draw that you mentioned with the bad weather. Brooks Koepka on Saturday morning is sitting back at the rental house having another cup of coffee, relaxing, cozy, and warm, whereas John Rahm is part of the group that's out there playing in these really tough, wet, brutal conditions out there at Augusta National. And so, again, he had to persevere through that. I think John Rahm, as of a few years ago, might have gotten frustrated over both of those things, might not have been able to keep his calm the way he did this week. And then going into the weekend, trailing Brooks Koepka, trailing a guy who has won major championships, who's closed out these big events, I think a John Rahm a few years ago may have tried to step on the gas pedal and play a little too aggressively. He did exactly what you're supposed to do, though, on this golf course, which is play a little offense when the course is giving you the ability to play offense and play defense, where the course is giving you a red light telling you that you have to be a little more conservative. I thought he was almost like the conductor of a symphony orchestra trying to essentially like plot his way around the golf course and figure out where to be aggressive and where to be conservative.
So Brooks Koepka obviously is tied for second there. He doesn't shoot a great Sunday, but I think the easy, fun, tongue-in-cheek real, like, you know, connection could be that 54 holes. Is he a three-round guy? I know that's, you know, a little bit of a joke, but at the same time, I wonder how you evaluate Brooks's weekend, the pressure, the delays that he also had to face as well, maybe playing behind the world's slowest golfer, Cantlay, the final day, and you saw the difference between Rahm's demeanor and obviously Koepka's, but how you wrap up what Brooks was able to do and where he eventually fell short.
I think we have to look at where Brooks came from over the last few years. I think we tend to think about Brooks as the guy who's from 2017 to 2019, won four majors, looked invincible in those tournaments, and a guy that we look at as a superstar. But I think we have to look at him in terms of where was he a year ago. He mentioned earlier in the week that after missing the cut at Augusta National, he tried to put his fist through the back windshield of his courtesy car. He was so frustrated. We saw him in the Full Swing documentary on Netflix talk about, you know, I'm not sure I'm ever going to be fully healthy. I'm not sure I could ever compete with the world's best players again. There was a lot of doubt there as to the future for Brooks Koepka. It's one of the reasons, in fact, it may be the main reason why he left for LIV Golf. And so for him to get into the heat of the battle, I know it's not the Sunday that he would have wanted, but I still think, and I've maintained for years, that when players get close to the major championship, the general public looks at it as a negative. Ah, he had a chance to win. He couldn't get it done under pressure. The players themselves take way more positives from that than negatives. I think Brooks Koepka will take away more positives from this than maybe even the general public realizes that, hey, he got back into contention. He knows now that he can go win another major championship, compete with the world's best players, play for 72 holes, and he's not just a ceremonial LIV golfer.
So what does Brooks' future hold now? He's obviously contractually obligated to play on the LIV Tour, whether he wants to or not. It looks like he's going to, you know, get to play in the majors, and that's good and fun. And I think everyone kind of welcomes that in a weird way because it does make it more interesting. But it just seems like this guy is like, you know, we're psychoanalyzing Brooks Koepka. We've done that because of Full Swing. We do that because of the decision to go to LIV. He's saying that, you know, he'd give it all up if he could just feel Sunday again, and he just felt Sunday. Like, what does the future hold now for Brooks Koepka after he kind of reintroduced himself to everybody once again?
Yeah, the short-term future is exactly that. It's exactly what you said, which is he'll go back to playing LIV golf events. They have 14 on the schedule this year. They've only played three so far, so he's got 11 more 54-hole events with his team, Smash GC, of course, where he's going to be playing over there. But he is qualified for the final three major championships of the year, so we'll see him there. Look, I'm an optimistic kind of guy. I'm looking for the silver lining here. And if there is a positive to all of the disruption that's taken place in the world of professional golf over the last year, it's that this past week was kind of cool, the fact that the world's best players, the best on the PGA Tour and the best on LIV Golf, have not seen each other in 9 months. And so all of a sudden, there's a little more anticipation to get them all together. I don't know if that was necessarily the final cause and effect that we're looking for in this whole thing, but it's a nice little byproduct that, okay, again, we're looking for positives out of this situation. The fact that we haven't seen Brooks Koepka, we haven't see Phil Mickelson or Patrick Reed playing against the John Rahms and the Patrick Cantlays and players like that. I think it almost makes these majors a little bit more enticing because we don't see them at other times during the year against each other.
What was the vibe around Phil after he carded that 7-under fourth round? Obviously didn't know he was going to play second at that point or T2. But this guy, we heard, you know, reports of him not saying anything at the champions dinner and maybe tail between the legs, but Phil had to be shooting some smiles around after that fourth round.
Yeah, no, look, the entire Phil Mickelson weekend was nothing that we could have predicted. It does remind me a little bit of Kiwa a couple of years ago when he won the PGA Championship. Afterwards, he said, yeah, I've been telling you guys I was going to play good golf for a while now. It's like, yeah, but you weren't playing good golf. It was tough to believe you. And then he comes to Augusta and he says, yeah, I feel like some good golf is right here. I'm about to play good golf. And I went and looked, and he hadn't finished better than 27th out of the 48-man fields in three previous events playing on LIV this year. And so it didn't really feel like he was going to play good golf. And then he proves himself right. There is so much to this Phil Mickelson story that is hard to fathom, including the fact that last year he skipped the Masters. He skipped Augusta National, his favorite place in the world, because not injury, but he was essentially staging a coup for players to join him in a renegade golf league and disrupt the world of professional golf. I mean, it's just as weird as it sounds. It sounds like the plot line to a bad movie, and yet it's exactly what was going on. He couldn't show his face at Augusta National. Comes back a year later, tail between his legs a little bit, was reportedly a little quieter at the Champions Dinner than usual. He seemed a little bit bashful on the golf course, in between the ropes when he was playing. Not the boisterous Phil, not the ebullient Phil that we've seen over the years, but just, you know, sort of quietly giving a thumbs up to the crowd when they cheered for him. But to finish in second place at the age of 52, that is some seriously impressive stuff. I have absolutely no idea what the future holds for Phil other than playing more golf on LIV and playing in the major championships. But, man, if he can do it there, I can't wait to see him at the next three major championships to see what he can do.
Besides Phil's story, I think maybe one of the other incredible stories that might headline is Sam Bennett and his appearance as an amateur and what he was able to do this weekend. Were you on the Sam Bennett train before this, and just how impressive is it to be able to come in and to have that level of like fortitude throughout the weekend to not crumble? And obviously he wasn't there at the end. His Sunday appearance was not as great as the rest of his weekend, but nonetheless just shocked a lot of people.
So I knew an amateur was going to be up there. I had a good feeling. I picked it, so I just had the wrong amateur. I thought it was going to be Gordon Sargent, who's the number one ranked amateur in the world, and it wasn't. It was Sam Bennett, the reigning U.S. amateur champion. Look, great week for him. Take nothing away from him. I still don't know that he's got the brightest future of all the college golfers out there right now. I do think that Sargent, a kid named Ludwig Aber, who's going to be really, really good in a few years, but all power to Bennett for what he did this weekend. And I'll throw in the fact that this is really good timing for him. It's very beneficial. And why is that? Because he's going to turn pro at some point in the next few months, I would say by early summer. And when he does, there's not a PGA Tour event around that won't give him a sponsor exemption to come play their event. So he's going to essentially start his professional career by standing on second base, which isn't a bad way to start it. So like I said, good timing. Obviously got his name out there, and a lot of people are going to be rooting for him. A lot of people are going to be wanting him to play in the golf tournaments. That's never a bad thing.
I saw a video of him returning home. I don't know if he just landed wherever he went back home, and he's wearing a Masters zip up. And I'm like, yeah, it's a bit of a tourism stop as well for Sam Bennett. I don't know if the other guys are wearing Masters gear on their way back home, but it was quite the experience for Sam Bennett. Last one, and we got to touch on Tiger a little bit. He makes the cut. Mother Nature helps him make the cut. Let's be honest, it got pretty greasy out there, and Justin Thomas helped his buddy out with a couple late bogeys. But Tiger could not get through the weekend himself, limping around. It's from what we saw, you know, if he had a cart, yeah, he can make the shot still, but getting around, clearly an issue. So what did we see from Tiger this week, or what do we know about the prospects of future participation given what Tiger went through this weekend?
Well, we don't know anything. Tiger's agent said the other day they're taking it day by day, and you know, I don't think they're making any rash decisions. There's no reason to. The next event that he would ostensibly play in would be the PGA Championship next month. I would not be surprised if Tiger decides to skip that one, maybe try to get healthier for the Open Championship in July, but this is a really tough proposition. It's essentially now a catch-22. For Tiger Woods. He says, look, I'm really hurting. I can't go out there. I can't practice the way I need to. And I can't play 12 events a year and prepare for the major championships. Well, then he shows up for the major championships and he's not prepared to go play 72 holes of golf and not just hitting the shots, but walking around. I have learned, and we have all learned over the years, to never write off Tiger Woods. We've seen comeback after comeback after comeback. That said, I've got to believe he is closer to hanging it up altogether than he is right now to winning another major championship. I hope I'm wrong about that, and I'm not saying he's not going to continue trying and not going to continue to keep playing. But at some point, we need to listen to Tiger as well, because he's been telling us, look, this ain't going to last forever. And if we're listening, you know, we don't even have to read between the lines. We're just listening to his words. We should understand that, like, this is not going to be a deal where he's 63 years old and still showing up at Augusta every year and making the cut. And then, you know, we'll say, oh, I didn't finish top 10 this year. It's not going to last as long as a lot of us think it will, or as long as a lot of us hope it will. So I think we need to at least enjoy it for now. And the fact that he made the cut is somewhat miraculous. His buddies, like you mentioned, Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas, two of the best golfers in the entire world, friends of Tiger Woods, missed the cut this weekend. I'd love to hear that or watch that group text. You know, Tiger's firing a couple things back at those guys. But just for him to make the cut is pretty remarkable. couldn't keep it going. And the future, again, we've said this for so many times with Tiger, but it's unknown.
Yeah, maybe he'll let it breathe a bit. Justin Thomas looked like he was close to tears, and I don't think Rory McIlroy was overly happy over the weekend after missing the cut. So, yeah, I mean, I think we got to listen to him. You're right, because he kind of pointed to it, and it's not going to last forever. And then his body breaks down, and I think we know why his tone was the way it was before the Masters kicked off on Thursday. Safe travels, Jason. This was a lot of fun. We appreciate the insight, and hopefully we can chat again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
That's Jason Sobel, golf writer at the Action Network and host at Sirius XM, PGA Tour Radio.
Looking ahead at the RBC Heritage this weekend, a lot of the big guys will be in attendance, the big tournament, which we just get right back on there, make those, our picks.
Those big dollars dangling at a premium event. You see the Rahms, the Schefflers, and the McElroys show up. I'm all for it.
All right, we'll get to that Wednesday or Thursday with our look ahead for our FanX Cup. None of us picked our buddy Rahm, so we are still at the same standings that we were previously, but we had some good showings in the top 10, at least, so we were sniffing around.
Were you sweating that Brooks 40-1
I sure was sweating the Brooks 40-1.
But that would have been tough to overcome.
I wasn't cheering against you, but I kind of was, so.
No, you're just cheering against the live guy.
That's right. All right, let's do our Wake and Rake parlay now. We have no NBA, of course, because they're waiting to get the playing game started. So Raptors are in action on Wednesday against the Bulls. We'll tee that up tomorrow. Could be their last game of the season. Could be a step towards impressing everybody. All right, Leafs and Panthers tonight, 7 p.m. That will be maybe the debut of Matthew Nyes. Unconfirmed what's going on there, but rumblings nonetheless. They are dogs tonight against the red-hot Panthers. And it makes sense, but it's also not often that you see the Maple Leafs as plus-money dogs.
Yeah, I don't know how many times they've been dogs over the course of this season.
I think maybe three that I can
remember. I was going to say less than 10, for sure.
Oh, God, yeah.
But they've had a couple games, you know, resting guys, and that plays into it. Boston Bruins might have been favored over them. But, yeah, it's a rare sight to see plus-money on the Maple Leafs on the strict money line. Doesn't mean that you should rush to play it. It's probably plus-money for a reason. But if you want to take a shot on the Maple Leafs tonight, I think there are far worse bets.
Yeah, so they're plus 115 where I'm seeing it against Panthers overset at 7. My pick today, though, is coming from the NHL and is coming from teams that need to win, and that's the Minnesota Wild tonight. I'm putting them on the puck line over the Blackhawks. Blackhawks are not good at hockey. The Minnesota Wild need to win. They're pretty heavy in terms of if you want to do money line, so I'm going to go puck line, and I'm going to hope that that hits.
A team that needs to win versus a team that needs to lose, that adds up for you, I think, and for us. I'm going to go the same route, and I'm going to put the pressure on the Colorado Avalanche with you, because the Minnesota Wild and the Dallas Stars are chasing Colorado for top spot in the Central Division. Important that Colorado gets that. Important then for Dallas or Minnesota to try and secure it. Dallas minus 105 in regulation over the Detroit Red Wings. That is my pick for today.
Okay, so let's go through our anchor picks and we'll select one. We've got Courier Chris from Oakville. Framber Valdez over 5.5 strikeouts tonight against the Pirates.
Framber, he was like Hall of Fame worthy at one point during the World Series, wasn't it? I think we were going to Framber a lot earlier on October and on the path to the World Series for the Houston Astros. Next up, we've got Just Jeff and Barry, Islanders on the puck line. They're looking to sew up a playoff spot, and the Caps are preoccupied with booking tee-off times. Yes, it seems like Washington has other things on their mind, and a big one for the Islanders. So that's a decent look as well.
Good morning, Eilish and Justin. Frank S., always interesting. Wake and Rake picks all women's world championships. Finland and Hungary over 6.5. Switzerland money line, and of course, Canada money line. Well, I'll be at the Canada-USA game, so I kind of like adding that one. But I said I wasn't making any more women's world picks after I lost two in a row, so I will just quietly say I like Japan as dogs.
Can you give a rubber stamp to any of those?
Yeah, Canada money line. I like them all, except I texted back Jeff and said I kind of like Japan as dogs against Swiss. But
okay.
Nonetheless, one last one. Leafs over 6.5, and Jules will take the Leafs to win in regulation. That's Ron and Jules.
Leafs win in regulation plus 120. I think you'd get better than that somewhere.
Okay, so what are you liking?
A little early for some Framber Valdez.
I'm seeing Leafs in regulation plus 185, so maybe they just meant Leafs.
I think that's just Leaf money line. Mm-hmm. Leafs in regulation plus 185.
That's crazy.
It's not a terrible bet.
It's crazy good.
I think we should roll with Canada today. Canada, U.S., you're going to the game.
Mm-hmm.
Big game. The game of the night is Canada and the United States at the Women's World Championship. And frankly, I mean, you laid it out perfectly. U.S. team is going through a little transition. Canadian team is tried and true, been together for a long time, mm-hmm. playing at a high level. I feel like it's Canada over the United States tonight.
I'll lock it in then. Three teams, three hockey games tonight. Dallas Stars in regulation over the Detroit Red Wings. The Wild on the puck line against the Blackhawks. And Canada on the money line against the United States. You parlay that together at plus 554 for your Wake and Rake this Monday morning.
Only five more nights in the NHL. Monday through Friday here. We'll have all the playoffs set. We'll tee it up pretty hastily, honestly, Monday, because we don't have a couple days of lead up because we're off, obviously, on the weekends. But I want to see more playoff matchups set so we can break that all down. Otherwise, it's going to be a busy Wake and Rake on Monday.
It sure will be. Obviously, no Matthew Nyes props up yet, but you bet if he gets added to a book, you're putting money on an anytime goal. Apparently, he'll wear number 23 for the Maple Leafs. Good number.
If he's playing in the top six, yeah, I'll probably be going that route as well.
I've been looking. He's not in there yet, but something to keep an eye on. Could be pretty fun. Could be a great morning tomorrow morning if Leafs Canada little homers parlay hits and Matthew Nyes anytime goal. Could be fun.
So your dog was Japan?
Japan, and also I'm fading the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm going money line for the Red Sox. I hate it, but I think that you can't win 10 in a row.
I just wanted to make sure that pick got on record, that you're stepping in front of the Tampa Bay Rays right now.
Yep, I sure am. Boston Red Sox plus 135 on the money line. Why not?
Okay.
Parlay that with Japan. Could be fun. I just can't see the Rays winning 10 in a row. Please don't.
I kind
of It's more of a gut pick. More of like a fade them. You know, I'm trying to make it happen. Okay. We'll be back tomorrow, Tuesday morning. We'll chat about the home opener for your Toronto Blue Jays. Excited for that. And Leafs and Panthers, maybe Matthew Nyes.